Welcome to the PDPW podcast, brought to you by Professional Dairy Producers, dairy's professional development organization.
Hi, this is Bruce Vincent. I'm a third-generation logger from Libby, Montana, and I'm honored to share some time with you this morning on the PDP podcast. I'll be doing a few of these to discuss some things that I think I've learned in my decades-long journey to try to save my family heritage of forest management and try to save the community I was raised in and loved that was built on that heritage. And I may have met some of you during my time of jawjacking, and I'm honored to be here discussing a commodity today that's a bit tough to hang on to. And the commodity I want to discuss isn't corn or cotton or timber, it's hope. Now, we've got some really ugly things going on in our country and in our world right now. And some days it'd be really easy to flop ourselves down on the sofa and just give up on humanity in general, and our nation in particular. Doesn't take a rocket scientist to see that there's lots of things that are just screwed up. In fact, we're told many times a day that things suck. And not only do they suck, but they're the worst they've ever been. And if we think for a minute that things are about to get better, we have 200 channels on our satellite dish or our streaming service or cable television or our streaming radio that tell us several times an hour that we're facing existential threats from a huge variety of unresolved issues. And I don't know about you, but growing up, I didn't hear the term existential unless it was referring to some philosophical theory of social framework. But now we have an entire generation that has had a tsunami of bad news aimed at them, and each news item is declared to be existential, which means that our very existence is imminently threatened with something. And good grief, according to the many channels of news, there's a laundry basket of issues that are so dire that our very existence is imperiled. And we just came out of a pandemic. And that was awful. It was existential. Trump getting reelected is discussed as being existential. Biden getting reelected is existential. Climate change, war in Ukraine, war in the Middle East, Iran and North Korea and the nuclear bomb, inflation, election interference, terrorism, the list goes on and on and on. And the headlines for each one of these issues from supposed sources of news contain all of the hallmarks of a campaign to get us to stay tuned to the television or the station, or to right-click on the article to read about how we are screwed and how we're about to get screwed. And I call it fear-mongering clickbait. The headline has to be egregious enough to get us to click on it and read it. That's how they get their advertising metrics for their sponsors. And the stories are scary, especially for a generation of kids just getting their sea legs in life. And the old adage of if it bleeds, it leads is true, and we have hundreds of information sites that are jockeying to get our attention with their click-baiting fear-mongering. And none of this is really new. Fear tactics have been used for a long time by a wide variety of institutions or leaders of institutions as a way to get society to move in one direction or another, or to control societies. What's new is the amount of information easily available to all of us should we decide to study an issue and determine what our position might be. We're all just a click away from getting the news. In the old days, you had to wait until 6 o'clock to watch Walter Cronkite do his half hour on the world as we know it today. That's not the case anymore. There's 24-hour cable news and opinion channels, internet Google searches, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. Each source uses flashy and sensationalized headlines to get us to click or read or listen. And all too often, they use or misuse facts or statistics that confirm the underlying message of we are doomed. And this fear-mongering clickbait headlines and stories, it's dangerous, particularly if we don't or can't put what's really going on in immediate or historical context. If you want to confirm a bad news story, you don't have to put it in context. All you have to do is go find a multitude of sites that can feed your need to know. And if you aren't careful, you can use the information now easily available on our TV, our computer, our laptop, our iPad, our phone, or the radio to do little more than confirm what you already think to be true. That's bias confirmation, I call it. And that's why I try really hard when I'm trying to figure out a news story. I channel surf or station surf, try to get information from different places on news items or issues, try a variety of sources, including sources that question my already held positions or conclusions, and push me to think outside the box that we all construct around our daily lives or our personal opinions. I try really hard to get out of my bias-confirming echo chamber and force myself to look at issues from a different angle. And then I can determine what I think about that issue. But I have to consistently remind myself that somewhere in this sea of information soup, there's a body of actual truth and reality. I just have to find it. And right now, the truth about the state of the world is not nearly as dire as the clickbait headlines would have me believe. Yeah, things are ugly. But my grandpa had a saying that rings true today. He said, most happiness and unhappiness is caused by comparison. So are things in today's world the worst ever? Comparatively speaking, on a bunch of important issues, I don't think they are. I don't think they're the worst ever. I think about growing up in the 60s and 70s, and there were some ugly things going on then. We think politics is ugly today with mean tweets. When I was growing up, the president got shot and killed. His brother running for president got shot and killed. We had righteous civil rights riots melting our major cities, and Martin Luther King was shot and killed. President Nixon was forced to resign because of the ugly Watergate scandal. And war? 58,000 of my peers came home in body bags from Vietnam. We didn't have laws on the books to take care of things like our air and water. We didn't have the Clean Air Act. We didn't have the Clean Water Act. And some things were in tough shape. The Great Lakes were dying. The Cuyahoga River caught on fire and burned for a week through Cleveland. And the air in our big cities was turning purple. And we were told at that time that there was irrefutable evidence that because of uncontrolled actions of humans, our planet was facing the certainty of a coming ice age. But were things in my generation the worst ever? Or maybe not, compared to the previous generation. That generation, when I was born, had just gotten out of the Korean War. That happened just after the entire world was engaged in World War II and witnessing the Holocaust and the collective deaths of nearly 100 million people. But that generation also had to deal with the Great Depression, an economic downturn that makes our recent Great Recession pale in comparison. But were things the worst ever for that generation? I don't know. The generation before them had to deal with World War I, which at the time they called the war to end all wars. Near the end of that war, they dealt with the Spanish flu. It killed between 25 and 50 million people, and there were no antibiotics to deal with sickness and disease. But were those the worst times ever? I don't know. Not long before World War I, we dealt with the Civil War that saw brothers fighting brothers, cousins fighting cousins in our country, and it caused 650,000 casualties. That was kind of burly. And on just the political front, newscasters and headlines shout about politics being polarized and the ugliest they've ever been. Really? Comparatively speaking, Alexander Hamilton and Aaron Burr might disagree. That was almost, it was 200 years ago, and they were shooting at each other, and one of them died. So how are we really doing compared to past generations? And it's not pretty all the time right now, but comparatively speaking, we're doing pretty good. And the clickbait headlines of we're doomed are just scare tactics that we don't have to bite on. Comparatively speaking, what an exciting time to be alive. For over a century, life expectancy has consistently increased. That's a clue about how we're really doing. There are some listening to this podcast right now that are alive because of medical technologies that didn't even exist 10 or 20 years or 30 years ago. That's awesome. And look at the availability of information that we can make decisions on. There are libraries and sets of encyclopedias right at our fingertips, right inside our phones. And just like the Jetsons, we can see each other while we talk on our phone. That's cool. And while it has downsides, look at the ability to communicate with each other compared to the old days of landlines and snail mail. Punch a button and send an instant message to our family or thousands of friends and family. That's cool. And the environment? Not only is the Cuyahoga River no longer burning, that river's a national monument. And the Great Lakes are again fishable. And we have scrubbing technology on industrial smokestacks, and our air quality, at least in America, continues to improve. And I'm a logger, and it makes me happy to know that we have more forested land in America than we had at the turn of the last century. And it's because of production agriculture. Production agriculture has come a long ways in soil management techniques and are growing more food on less land. No longer do we need to try to grow corn and cotton on marginal land, and millions of acres of those marginal lands have converted to what God and nature intended it to be, and in most places in America, that's a tree. Do we have issues that need dealt with? Good heavens, yes. But society today is better equipped and has more available resources to deal with the issues than any previous generation had even dreamt of. Comparatively speaking, this generation standing in pretty tall cotton when they ponder climbing the next challenging hill. And that said, one of society's biggest challenges today is not letting the fear-mongering clickbait headlines scare the hope out of them. Hope is critical. If society believes we are doomed, we're in trouble. People who are fearful often make bad decisions. People that don't have hope and are fearful can make terrible decisions. And I struggle with this dilemma a lot personally. I look at what's going on and internally try to fight back against the hopeless headlines. And I found that I have to rely on a couple of really important things to help keep my head from spinning off. One thing I rely on is the comparative analysis we're just talking about. Comparatively speaking, humanity is doing pretty good, and the trajectory of improvement, no matter what the fear-mongering headlines say, the trajectory is up. The other thing I rely on is my faith, and a lesson taught to me by a guy named Mason Weaver. Mason is a minister. I met him in San Diego when I was traveling around jacking my jaw, and I loved his message of hope, and I loved it so much that we were having a loggers gathering in Washington, D.C. We spent a week, 300 of us, back in the hallways of Congress getting our legislative head handed to us. It was an ugly week. And at the end of the brutal week of getting our head handed to us, we had a Sunday spiritual breakfast to conclude our gathering. And I flew Mason in to be our speaker. And we couldn't afford to rent a ballroom, so we were having the Sunday spiritual event at 7 in the morning in the dingy, stinky bar of the cheapest-we-could-find hotel we were using. And when I met Mason at the door, he peered around me and he looked at the crowd of sunken-faced loggers, and he walked over and he asked, "Is this the Christian logger group?" Told him it was, and he kind of shook his head and started walking to the podium I had set up, and he grabbed the microphone, looked out at the crowd of long faces, and he said, "Are you Christian loggers?" And with bags under their eyes and saddened, droopy faces, everybody nodded and said, "Yeah, that's us." Mason then asked, "Well, have you read the good book?" And, of course, all the people in attendance, they nodded, and, yep, they'd read it. Then he asked, "Do you believe the word of the good book?" And again, all the heads nodded, yep. His final question was the important one. Have you read the end of the book? And again, there were nods, and he followed by saying, if you've read the book, believe the word, and have read the book all the way through the end, how can you possibly be frowning? We win. His message was important for me to hear that day, but it gets ever more important as I make my way through this earthly life. There is salvation for those of us who believe, and with that knowledge, we should all be smiling as we go through this life. Smiling because of our certain knowledge of everlasting, eternal salvation through Christ. During these trying times, if we can't be smiling as we look forward, if we don't have hope for a better tomorrow, who in the world can have hope? That's what our faith gives us, unwavering hope. And I kind of think that's a big part of my witness, my mission. In these trying times, it's as simple as a smile. When the world is going crazy and people are howling at the moon or howling at each other or howling at me, I think others may wonder about the guy who's grinning and start to ask questions about how, with all of this crap going on, how can you be smiling? And I believe that that smile of gratitude for certain salvation may be the door to share the good news with folks who are exhausted with all the bad news and desperate for the simple commodity of hope. And for me, my faith in Jesus Christ is a reality that steadies my inner self when the craziness of the world shakes and rattles my foundation. It provides the clarity of eternal hope when there are storm clouds and smoke on the horizon that make the path forward hard to see. And we do live in tumultuous times. I'd argue that it's not the worst ever, but just like every generation, there are things that are testing humanity and testing our faith. To keep myself centered, several times a day, I think about what Mason said. I think about the good book, all the way to the end, and I smile. I smile because I know God has my back. He has our back. I smile because I know my kids and my grandkids are going to be challenged, but they too believe, and they too are going to be okay. I know they're going to be okay because I have read the good book all the way to the end, and it makes me smile. Thanks for listening. I'm now going to go spend the rest of my day working on issues, channel surfing the news, not biting into the clickbait fear-mongering, and smiling. Until next time, have a blessed and smile-filled and hope-filled week. Thanks.
Our thanks to Bruce Vincent for today's message. Bruce, a third-generation logger from Libby, Montana, and co-owner of the community outreach firm Environomics. Learn more about Bruce at brucevincentspeaking.com. And for archive PDP podcasts, visit pdpw.org. Until next time, have a great week.